Hello everyone, this is Tanya and Trisha, and welcome to the second episode of Hypothetically Speaking, a series of self-delusions. How's everyone doing? I hope you all had a wonderful week. So before we begin, thank you all for the overwhelming response to our first episode, the sheer number of emails and messages along with the two coming out stories left us wonderstruck. It was great to see how much love Hypothetically Speaking was met with.
With parallel hope that you all enjoy the second episode just as much, let us start with another slam poetry. And we will let you gauge the theme of this episode.
Vincent Van Gogh, quintessential misunderstood genius. He shot himself in the chest, right near his heart, with a Lafayette revolver. He chopped off his ear once after a fight with a friend and gave it to a prostitute as a token of his admiration. So you think he was furious first and smitten later? Jo chahta tha apni gurbat ka ehsaas, jo dhoond raha tha rakh se parwaaz. No, he was sad throughout. He used to swallow yellow paint, a happy color, and he yearned happiness. He had severe lead poisoning. Van Gogh created some of the most beautiful pieces of artwork in history. He painted the starry night when his own sky was a misery. Mujhe ye mat batao that his depression was romantic. Mat batao mujhe ki uski mayusi aur uski kala mein koi fark nahi. Mere saath baitho aur socho ki tumhari is baat mein koi tark nahi. Most of his marvels were created during rehab when he was healing. There's nothing poetic or beautiful about depression, or about the patterns you daily carve on your wrist, or about Van Gogh killing himself with a weapon I can barely pronounce. So I present before you a humble request. On days when your friend calls and you cry, remember, it's okay to take your time. Your failures don't define you, nor do your victories. No. That you've lost your shape temporarily, but the substance is still intact. You don't lose your voice because you couldn't speak when you wanted to the most. That not all stars brighten up your world, they were burning you when you were holding on to them tight. Social media ka dikhawa nahi, jo inayat de aisi khushi chahiye, smiley ke emoticons nahi, mujhe aapke chehre par muskaan chahiye. Remember that now as you spread your palms, your wounds will hurt, but they'll heal. Remember that your past is now gone, but the future will be kind. Please make sure that you go through your contacts and look for the names you haven't spoken to in a long time. Ask if they're doing okay. We've lost too many and too much to this. So please, please, please ask someone, including yourself, if they're okay more often. The ones we've lost won't come back, but we can still save someone. Mental health really is a big concern, especially during this time. And sadly, people believe that depression is beautiful and that is what inspires artists to make masterpieces. The authors Hewlett and Perrault conclude with certainty that even Mozart suffered from depression in his last years of life. Quite ironically, it was during this time that he came up with one of the best operas of all time, Dies Oboflo, or Inside the Magic Flute.
In this opera, a boy named Prince Tamino runs through a dark wood pursued by a dragon. Just as the dragon is about to devour him, three mysterious ladies appear and slay the dragon with their fierce battle cry. And so begins Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart's De Zauberflöte, or The Magic Flute. Tamino's run-in with the dragon is only the start of his journey. The three women summon their leader, the Queen of the Night, who, in turn, sends Tamino on a quest to save her daughter Pamena from the evil sorcerer Zoroastro. And to help him on his journey, she gives him the titular magic flute. The flute is magical because of the four elements it's made of. It's made of wood from the earth on a rainy night and when there is water, and also thunder and lightning, which signifies fire, along with the most important component, someone to apply breath, somebody who has the wisdom to play the music on the flute. Only then does the flute work its magic and return harmony. Tamino eventually finds Pamina at Zoroastro's temple, but behind enemy lines, they discover that they were in fact on the wrong side. The Queen of the Night actually wants to plunge the world into darkness. Everything Tamino thought he knew was wrong, filling him with doubt and confusion.
That took a nice little twist for something written in the 18th century. What happens next?
So now, a new challenge is faced by Tamino and Pamina. They must pass the three trials of wisdom, and only then can they vanquish the Queen of the Night. Helped by the flute's magic power, the two youths overcome these trials and the Queen's attempts to sabotage them. They are finally initiated to the temple, having restored the balance and peace of the kingdom. Though it might seem like a childish fairy tale, this intricate opera is full of subversive symbolism and is now regarded as one of the most influential operas in history.
Okay, I can tell why. I noticed patterns in the story which I believe links it to the happenings of the country at that time and also to Mozart's personal life. One of the patterns was the mention of the number 3 throughout the story. The three ladies, three spirits, three doors, and three trials. Even much of the music is written in E-flat major, which has three flats in its signature key. Of course, now, this number 3 is very easy to find in any work of storytelling, but its prominence in the magic flute made me stumble upon another realization. There was this secret society during Mozart's time, the Freemasons, and historically, the Masonic rituals began with three distinct knocks. It does have a connection, right? Is it a clear indication that Mozart belonged to the Freemasons?
Yes, that is right. He did belong to the Freemasons, and along with the pattern you picked up, there is another fact which indicates Mozart's involvement with the Freemasons. So basically, some Mozart scholars believe that the Queen of the Night symbolizes Maria Theresa, the Empress of the Holy Roman Empire, who opposed Freemasonry and banned it in the Austrian Empire. This is another link indicating the prevalence of Freemasonry, but that's all I'm aware of. I don't really know or understand what the Freemasons are. And it's a secret society, but is it for world domination, for peace? I don't know what it really does.
Alright. I do know a bit about the Freemasons. Basically, what else I noticed with this masterpiece that Mozart wrote during his patch of depression is that the symbols of Freemasonry and the ideals of enlightenment are found throughout the opera, like the number 3, which represented balance and order to the Freemasons. Many elements in this peculiar fairy tale were inspired by Mozart's involvement in Freemasonry, a network of fraternal organizations in Europe, and much of their historic symbolism and rituals came from the Middle Ages. The Freemasons of Mozart's time were also influenced by the 18th century European ideals, namely rationalism, humanism, and skepticism towards traditional authorities like monarchy and the church.
I think I understand where you're getting at. You mean that this story sounds like a conspiracy theory because it was sort of at that time. And some of the conspiracy theories that surround Freemasonry come from the Catholic Church and reach as far back as the era of the Crusades. But this opera is now taken quite seriously and has been the subject of considerable scholarly publication. And while there continues to be a debate as to the specific meaning, interpretation, and location of these Masonic references, scholars agree that they are there and are fully intentional. I can remember coming across some information about the Freemasons while looking up on the story. So, Freemasonry is structured in the Book of Kings 1 and 2, and as a Mason, you must believe in God or Jehovah and accept Jesus Christ. You must also take pledges to defend the poor, widows, and fatherless children and be willing to defend Christianity. I think they had such strict anti-atheist rules because of something that had happened in the past involving the kings, the popes, and the Templars. When the Templars began returning from the Holy Land with science, advanced medical techniques taught to them by the Arabs, and most importantly, money, the Pope and King Philip of France began to lust after what they returned with. Also, the Templars were giving away gold, medicine, and food to the downtrodden of Europe as each knight returned to his own country and people. As history goes, the king and the Pope grew jealous of the power of the Templars and how the people clamored after them. But I don't know what happens after this, do you?
Yes, in fact, I do. It turned into a colossal war which started with Pope Leo XIII calling the Freemasonry the Kingdom of Satan. With that, the Vatican and King Philippe charged them with false claims of heresy and had Commander Jacques de Molay and all the Templars arrested, their property seized and their families killed. On the 18th March 1314, Knights Templar Grandmaster Jacques de Molay was burnt at the stake on trumped-up charges of heresy. King Philippe IV of France was responsible for the destruction of this holy order. The day these men were arrested, killed and charged was Friday the 13th, 1307, which forever made Friday the 13th synonymous with bad luck. The Vatican did not apologize until 2007.
I also read somewhere that Solomon's Temple is a central symbol of Freemasonry, which holds that the first three Grand Masters were King Solomon, King Hiram I of Tyre, and Hiram Abiff, who was the craftsman or the architect who built the temple. Masonic initiation rites include the reenactment of a scene set on the Temple Mount while it was under construction.
Freemasons conducted their degree work often from memory, following a preset script and ritualized format. There are a variety of different Masonic rites for Freemasonry. Each Masonic jurisdiction is free to standardize or not standardize its own ritual. However, some similarities exist among jurisdictions. For example, all Masonic rituals for the first three degrees use the architectural symbolism of the tools of the medieval operative stonemason. Freemasons, as speculative masons, use the symbolism to teach moral and ethical lessons, such as the four cardinal virtues of fortitude, prudence, temperance, and justice, and the principles of liberty, equality, and fraternity.
So, fundamentally, every Masonic lodge is symbolically the temple for the duration of the degree and possesses ritual objects representing the architecture of the temple, which may either be built into the hall or be portable. And among the most prominent are replicas of the pillars of Boaz and Jachin through which every initiate has to pass.
Yes, that is correct. Historically, Freemasons used various signs, grips or tokens in passwords to identify legitimate Masonic visitors from non-Masons who might wish to gain access to the meetings. These signs, grips and passwords have been exposed multiple times. So today, Freemasons use dues cards and other forms of written identification. Another Masonic ritual is the rolled-up trouser leg. It's the one that gives us the most trouble, says Bob Cooper, a member of the Freemasons. What it means is that your skin touches the lodge, so there is physical contact between you and the lodge. It's just a very old and peculiar way of emphasizing the fact that you have entered an organization you're never going to renege on.
Hitler believed that the Masons were a tool of the Jews, and under the Nazi regime, between 80,000 and 200,000 Masons were murdered. So from what I can comprehend, the Freemasons are not a secret society, but rather a society with secrets. And these secrets are the various signs and gestures they used, like the ones you mentioned.
Yes, and despite the number of times these secrets have been exposed, they continue to act as if they were secret and promise not to discuss them with outsiders, more out of tradition than an actual need for secrecy. and Thai Masons know the existence of bloody oaths by which they initiate swears to keep the secret parts of the Masonic ceremonies a secret. This perception of secrecy has led to the creation of many Masonic conspiracy theories, the biggest and most controversial one being the mysterious disappearance of William Morgan in 1826, which is said to be due to his threat to publish a book detailing the secret rituals of Freemasonry.
That is a very serious accusation. I know another one of their interesting rituals. It was their habit of wearing two watches, one on their left hand and the other on the right. The watch on the left hand was stuck on the time the wearer was born on. Like I was born on 12:15, so the left watch would remain frozen at 12:15, which would remind me of where I came from, my childhood, the dreams and aspirations I had. While the watch on the right hand would move with the present time and remind me of the road I still have to embark on. And this would ignite my commitment to achieving my dreams. The purpose of wearing two watches was to signify that one should be eternally grateful to those throughout one's life who helped them achieve all that they have. And they shouldn't consider hurdles or achievements as the last test. Instead, they should keep moving like the hands of the watch on the right hand.
Oh well, I didn't know about this one. But, I have another funny thing I found out about the Freemasons. So basically, Freemasons had various rules for admission, one of which was paying a huge fee for joining the cult. Many people such as Adam Weishaupt didn't have the required fee to join the Freemasons. So do you know what he did? He started his own secret society called the House of Illuminati, or commonly called the Illuminati.
Oops, that took a dark turn for the Freemasons.
Yeah, but don't worry. Illuminati is a thing of the past. Its existence in the contemporary world is just a theory created by conspiracists.
Whatever you want to say, the Illuminati has a very real historical foundation. In 1776 in Bavaria, Germany, Adam Weishaupt, who was a German professor, was inspired by the ideals of French philosophy, namely secularism and rational thought, and he wanted to protect those beliefs. He considered joining the Freemasons to help propagate his views, but unfortunately could not afford the admission fee. So instead, he formed a secret group of his own, which he called the Order of the Illuminati. The Illuminati had an anti-religious stance and focused on self-knowledge, social reform, and free thought. Naturally, conservatives regarded this as a threat to the church, and by the late 1780s, Illuminati was stopped and the act of actively recruiting people into secret societies was criminalized. However, Adam and the Illuminati continued to be persistent on meetings, eventually spreading their roots to France before disappearing into obscurity. In my opinion, it was a highly ambitious world domination plan for a bunch of guys who could not afford the admission fee to a common cult.
They did some unusual things. They used symbols like the owl, adopted pseudonyms to avoid identification, and had complicated hierarchies like novice Minerval and eliminated Minerval that divided the ranks. And while they were following these bizarre rituals, they also promoted a worldview that reflected enlightenment ideals like rational thought and self-rule. Anti-clerical and anti-royal in their approach, the Illuminati were closer to revolutionaries than world rulers, since they thought to infiltrate and upset powerful institutions like the monarchy. In 1785, the Duke of Bavaria, Karl Theodore, banned secret societies including the Illuminati and instituted serious punishments for anyone who joined them. Most of the group's secrets were disclosed or published, and if you believe most historians, which you should, the Illuminati disappeared. Most recently, the Illuminati conspiracy theories believe that they are a part of the New World Order, and the New World Order goes as high as the President of the United States, which is obviously not true.
Wow, that is a lot of information for a non-believer. Sounds like you are trying to keep your membership a secret by taking a strong stand against its entire existence. Even the conspiracy theories would agree with this. Most of the celebrities who are in the Illuminati pretend it doesn't even exist. And I quote Beyoncé's formation, "You all coy me with the Illuminati mess." Looks like that's what you're trying to do.
You put me, Beyonce, and celebrities in the same sentence? Now, isn't that flattering? But have you even read these conspiracy theories? They don't make any sense. People will use a term like Illuminati to define anything that they don't like because it might challenge their values. I'll tell you what kind of a person you would be like according to these conspiracy theories if you were a member of the Illuminati. There is a theory by Donald Marshall who believes that the Illuminati is killing celebrities and replacing them with clones to brainwash the society. Someone please tell him that clones don't come out of a Xerox machine like that. There is this another conspiracy theory which says that Queen Elizabeth, Barack Obama, and the Clintons are actually shape-shifting lizards. Does any of this make any sense at all to you? It is amazing how people believe all this crap. Like, is this what you're really into? This is what you believe?
Well, I meant that there are other more believable theories as well. The mysterious group is often accused of being behind nefarious global events, and coronavirus has prompted further speculation about the Illuminati's powers on online forums. I remember reading about this last week where the Wired one said, I quote, "Sploshing about this sludge are various coronavirus conspiracy theories that this is all an Illuminati mass murder plot. Might not have a shred of truth to it, but it is still downright dangerous," unquote. Illuminati references can even be spotted in various famous architectures and buildings, such as the Washington Monument, which was built in honor of George Washington, who was a member of the Freemasons and is rumored to have strongly supported the Illuminati. The monument has lots of similarities to an obelisk, a prominent symbol of both the Illuminati and the Freemasons. Illuminati connections can also be spotted on the United States Capitol building. It may not be obvious at first, but thanks to Google Earth, one can access the aerial view of the landscape and fields around the Capitol building, which strangely resembles an owl, which is yet another symbol connected to the organization. The Illuminati theory has a really broad base of committed adherents, particularly in the US, when nearly 15% of the American electorate believe that the Illuminati exists. The age groups most likely to believe this are the Gen Xers and the older millennials. So doesn't this give enough testament in support of Illuminati's existence?
But honestly, most of these researchers and conspiracists follow a bit of trail of evidence which initially makes sense even to the most ardent non-believers, but then it turns into something crazy and absurd like Beyonce being a clone shape-shifting lizard. I'm telling you, it's not a real thing.
Well, there is also another theory that the lizard elite is behind the Freemasons and the Illuminati. The story originates from the old folklore that the lizard race feeds on the human race and occasionally demands human sacrifices. Basically, lizards shaped cannibals and they...
I'm sure you have a wonderful origin story for this as well, but I don't think me or literally anybody needs to know that.
Alright, but whether or not conspiracists believe in the cloning theory, they sure agree that certain celebrities are in the Illuminati by pointing at their choice of clothing and hand gestures which resemble that of a pyramid.
The thing that ties conspiracy theories together is that they always point at someone who's supposedly powerful. You never hear a conspiracy theory about the homeless guy in a street or a gang of poor children, do you? That is because these stories don't sell. They need celebrities because there is a chance of getting one's theory popularized by using someone who's popular.
Yes, okay, point taken. But other celebrities pulled in this Illuminati mess include Kanye West.
Yeah, alright, because he owns a necklace containing this symbol called the Eye of Horus, which is usually associated with the Illuminati, and it is also seen on the dollar bill. Oh, so very convincing.
See, it's right there. You can't possibly deny that. Other celebrities who are rumored to be a part of Illuminati include Rihanna, Madonna, Lady Gaga, even Katy Perry. And there is proof for all of them, which usually involve...
Not agreeing on this baseless necklace theory of yours, but yeah, some of your points might make sense, so we can't completely rule out the possibility of its existence. So, am I going to say that the Illuminati is still a real thing? No, I'm not. But is it possible? It might be, who knows.
So this brings us to the end of our second episode, where we went over Van Gogh's depression in poetic form, heard the story of one of the most influential operas written by Mozart, who happened to be a Freemason, and then learned that the finicky nature of the Freemasons led to the creation of Illuminati, which may or may not exist, but owning clothes or accessories with triangles can sure entangle you in this never-ending conundrum.
Thank you all for being a really lovely audience, and send us suggestions on what you want us to discuss next. Let us know if you liked our episode. We love some validation. And also, do not forget to follow our podcast on Spotify. Stay tuned for the next episode.